Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Wednesday, September 29th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. We are expecting a rather cloudy day today. Southeast winds between 6 and 12 miles per hour. It's going to be warm for this time of year, 88 degrees for our high. Tonight, under partly cloudy and mild skies, we'll go down to 63 degrees. East-southeast winds 3 to 6 miles per hour. Looking at the regional outlook, mostly cloudy and warm today, with the temperature approaching the record of 91, set in 1897, partly cloudy and mild tonight, remaining warm tomorrow with clouds and sun. Friday, we may see a couple of showers and a high that day of 78 degrees. The sun didn't rise this morning until 7:05 a.m., and it sets tonight at 6:54 p.m. The next time we'll see a sunset as late as 7 o'clock p.m. will be next March. I was just wondering when daylight savings time ends, and it's not until November 7th. The stories on the front page today are accompanied by colorful pictures of the mayor's race, and the titles for the stories are A Playful Race for Mayor, Fun Run T-Shirts Prompt Spat Between Klein and Mayor, and let's begin reading Parents Sound Off on Mask Mandates. Parents at Cedar Falls and Waterloo School Board meetings have their say on mask requirements. Andrew Wind wrote this story, and it begins with a photograph showing board meeting attendees sitting in front of the podium at the board meeting. The caption says, "Attending at the Cedar Falls Board of Education meeting Monday, when 16 people talked about masks during the public comment period. Cedar Falls. With a new system in place determining when masks are required in elementary schools, people are ready to voice their opinions to the Board of Education Monday on the divisive topic. 16 Cedar Falls Community School District residents, among more than 40 attendees, spoke during the board's public comment period. The meeting chamber at City Hall was filled with some people standing in the back or in the hallway, an uncommon occurrence at board meetings. Starting Monday, both the Cedar Falls and Waterloo districts began deciding the need for masks based on the Black Hawk County COVID rate of spread and the percentage of students and staff at individual elementary schools who are absent due to the virus. The comments were roughly split between those favoring a mask mandate and those who want masks optional for all students. The crowd appeared split as well, with those wearing and not wearing masks during the meeting sitting together on separate sides of the center aisle. The topic was also addressed Monday by two residents at the Waterloo Community Schools Board of Education. Quote, "I appreciate the balance that is being sought with this plan," said Andrew Bolthouse, one of the speakers at Cedar Falls board meeting. However, Bolthouse argued that in spite of what's being required, he has observed most people have moved on. Given the option, he said, they don't wear a mask. Quote, "I think it's time to move on," said Bolthouse. Others felt the need for masking is so urgent that districts should do more than they have. Amanda Weber delivered a petition to the Cedar Falls Board with more than 300 signatures calling for mask use in schools and said she wanted to voice my support for a mask mandate. It helps to keep our kids in person. Quote, "Nobody likes to wear a mask," she added, "but her family is doing so to protect themselves and others they come into contact with." Masks are being required at Waterloo and Cedar Falls elementary schools for weeks when the county rate of spread is moderate or high, and the percentage of students and staff out with COVID-19 at a building is 3% or greater. Masks continue to be encouraged at secondary schools, but there is no requirement that they be worn. Children under 12 are not yet eligible for the vaccine, which caused the focus on elementary schools. At the Waterloo board meeting, Dustin Lies called on officials to, quote, "at a minimum, implement a mask mandate until the vaccine is available for children under 12, unquote. He added, quote, "There's no doubt that masks help prevent the spread of COVID. There are two studies published last week by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showing schools without mask mandates were 3.5 times more likely to have a COVID outbreak, unquote. He criticized the district's approach to determining when to require masks. Waiting until we know that our COVID levels are high before we require masking is the exact opposite of what science would have us do, said Lies. This has become a political issue about parents, not public health issue about children. Waterloo Superintendent Jane Lindemann responded that, quote, we did try and set a lower threshold by requiring masks when 3% of students and staff are absent. Quote, we weren't waiting until the number skyrocketed to spring into action, she said. We were really looking for any type of trend. At the Cedar Falls Board, Stephanie Turing Peters said, in light of CDC guidance, the current policy is, quote, playing with the health of our students, and the losers will be our students, unquote. The federal agency recommends universal indoor masking for all teachers, staff, students, and visitors to kindergarten through 12th grade schools, regardless of vaccination status, with the rapid spread of the Delta coronavirus variant in much of the country. Quote, it never occurred to us that the Cedar Falls Community School District would turn away from science, said Turing Peters. Some felt that the Cedar Falls Board should have determined the plan. Quote, your job is to guide the school district in setting policy, said Andrea Geary. She suggested there was a dereliction of duty by the board in allowing the administration to determine the policy on masks. Quote, call a special meeting of the board, provide full transparency of the process, and adopt a universal mask mandate, unquote. Mark Isle called the new system reactionary and a little bit rushed, questioning why there is no standard for masking at the junior highs and high school. Quote, I don't like that the board was not involved, he said. I would like involvement from the board when a policy is controversial is put into place. I think a process like this would have allowed concerns to be raised, unquote. In response to those criticisms, board president Jeff Hassman said, quote, throughout the pandemic, our administration team, led by our superintendent, has been determining the approach to such issues. He highlighted board policies 504.2 on communicable diseases, 507.2 on student illness, and 504.1 on the dress code, all of which give the superintendent an ultimate role in decision-making. Quote, I want you to understand, from a context standpoint, this board has relied on our administration, he said. Some who favor returning to the mask optional approach that the school year started with emphasized the unlikeliness that children would contract or get sick from the virus. Quote, as a parent who has done my research, I know the risk of illness is very low, Jordan Lando told the Cedar Falls board. She called it, quote, perplexing that schools are making a decision she feels belongs to parents. At the Waterloo board, Luis Ramirez said his first grader was sent home from school over the mask issue. Quote, I strongly feel like we as parents, we have the right to send our kids to school with a mask or without a mask, he told the board. Quote, I feel like it's not about the school board or the government. I feel like parents, we do decide for our kids because we are their voice, unquote. Ryan Dugan told the Cedar Falls board the issue should have been settled months ago when lawmakers passed a law prohibiting mask mandates in schools. Quote, in my opinion, the Iowa legislature has spoken on this, he said. He believes that made it a parental issue and it should be left that way, unquote. The change was made after a federal judge signed a temporary restraining order on September 13th, halting enforcement of the state law. That order has been extended to October 11th. Initially, the Cedar Falls and Waterloo districts put a week-long mask mandate in place for elementary school children before coming out with their similar policies. Waterloo board member Stacy Mills said she would have preferred a K-12 mask mandate, but acknowledged, quote, the enormous amount of emails and other messages she received with various viewpoints. Quote, everybody's voice does matter, she said. I hear you and I appreciate you, unquote. In Cedar Falls, board member Alan Heisterkamp told the audience that he listened and took notes during the comment period. He is looking forward to moving ahead and doing what's best for the broader public. After the meeting, Hossman said he also welcomed the input, which will be considered as the district goes forward. Quote, "It will be a continual dialogue," he said. Our next story is a playful race for mayor. Chris Zeller filed this story, and it is accompanied by several colorful pictures. The top one shows fourth graders taking off from the starting line Tuesday during the annual Mayor's Fun Run in downtown Waterloo. Waterloo, hundreds of fourth graders gathered at the River Loop Expo Plaza on Tuesday for the annual Mayor's Fun Run throughout downtown Waterloo. The event, in its 22nd year, is meant to encourage children to make healthy food choices and to stay active each day. Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart, participating in the event for his fifth time, took time prior to the run to pump up students from each of the 14 public and private schools in attendance. State Representative Timmy Brown Powers spoke prior to the run, promoting healthy alternatives to sugary beverages, with fourth grade volunteers on hand to show the amount of sugar in several popular sodas and energy drinks. Then began the fun as the students lined up class by class and took off on a one-mile run through downtown with the goal of beating Mayor Hart to the finish line. Students were rewarded with a healthy lunch and music from Hip Hop Literacy 319 after the race. Amy Rivers filed this next story, Dust Up Between Mayor and Klein Over the Wrong Title on Fun Run T-Shirts. Waterloo, a city councilor running for mayor and the political action committee backing her, accused Mayor Quentin Hart of secretly changing the police chief's title after seeing it mistakenly printed on Mayor's Fun Run T-shirts on Tuesday. The accusation was labeled Breaking News on the Cedar Valley Backs the Blue Pack Facebook page Tuesday afternoon, where it had garnered several comments and shares. Quote, "It would appear the mayor has promoted Joel Fitzgerald to Director of Safety Services," the group wrote, sharing a photo of Waterloo Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald's signature, name, and title on the back of a T-shirt given to fourth graders participating in Tuesday's annual fun run. Quote, "The mayor chose to announce this on the back of the T-shirts worn by fourth graders today," the group added. City Councilor Margaret Klein, one of two candidates challenging the incumbent Hart, and who has been endorsed by Backs the Blue, emailed a response to the Courier as well. Quote, "In keeping with his tradition of doing things behind closed doors, the mayor never discussed this move with the city council," Klein wrote. "In this latest stunt, the mayor has reaffirmed that he has no interest in working with the city council or our police officers. Rather, he only cares about the well-being of his hand-picked chief." After he was made aware of the controversy Tuesday, Hart said Fitzgerald's title has not changed. Instead, he said it was an inadvertent mistake by Leisure Services, which makes the shirts for the run. He said Leisure Services swapped former Director of Safety Services Dan Trocca's name from the 2019 shirt design with Fitzgerald's name and signature, but did not change the job title, resulting in the incorrect title for Fitzgerald. Quote, "There was no closed-door decision to elevate Chief Fitzgerald to Director of Safety Services," unquote. Hart wrote, "It was an unfortunate misprint. The accusation is irresponsible and disappointing," unquote. Leisure Services Director Paul Hutting confirmed that account in a statement Tuesday, saying it was a simple editing mistake made by his department. Quote, "I sincerely apologize and accept responsibility for any confusion or controversy caused," Hutting wrote. Hart further noted that despite denigrating Fitzgerald lately, Klein supported his hiring last year. When told of Hart's explanation, Klein contended, "Trelka's title has not been Director of Safety Services since 2016, when he transitioned back to police chief." Quote, "So the shirts must have been wrong for the past several years," Klein said. She also said she had heard rumblings that Hart intends to make this change regarding Fitzgerald's title. Hart responded that he had reassigned Trelka's duties to focus on being police chief that year, but Trelka's title technically had not changed, so it was not changed on the t-shirts. He provided a PDF of the shirt design from 2017 of proof the title had remained the same. Waterloo Community Schools also sent a statement through the mayor's office. Quote, "This is such an unfortunate misinterpretation of what amounts to a clerical oversight," the district wrote. "This event is truly intended to be about young children in our community who we all love and support," unquote. Next, January 6 trials slowed by mounting evidence, story filed by the Associated Press, and begins with a photograph taken on the exterior of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., and the caption reads, "Supporters of President Donald Trump scale the West Wall of the U.S. Capitol in Washington on January 6th. In the nearly 9 months since the insurrection, federal agents have managed to track down and arrest more than 600 people across the U.S. believed to have joined in the riot at the Capitol." And then the article goes on, "In the nearly 9 months since January 6th, federal agents have tracked down and arrested more than 600 people across the United States believed to have joined in the riot at the U.S. Capitol. Getting those cases swiftly to trial is turning out to be an even more difficult task. Investigators have collected a mountain of evidence in the attack and are working to organize it and share it with defense attorneys. And that mountain keeps growing with new arrests still happening practically every week. Washington's federal court, meanwhile, is clogged with January 6 cases, which more than doubled the total number of new criminal cases filed there all of the last year. Further complicating things are limitations the court has put on trials because of the coronavirus pandemic. The court delays are dragging out a process already called into question by some right-wing lawmakers who argue it's a waste of time and money to prosecute people accused of low-level crimes. As the court cases continue to stall, so do answers to what happened that day and the possibility for consequences from the most violent assault at the Capitol in a generation. Meanwhile, Democrats in the House are subpoenaing former Donald Trump's aides and have requested a trove of documents as a select committee also probes the insurrection. While it's not unusual for federal cases to take a year or more to work through the system, some defense lawyers and judges are raising concerns that defendants with a right to a speedy trial may end up waiting a long time before getting their day in court. Quote, "The reason for the delay has not changed or become even remotely concrete. It remains as amorphous today as it was a month ago," an attorney wrote in court documents opposing prosecutors' request to cancel the scheduled November trial for Timothy Hale Cusinelli, an ex-Army reservist described by co-workers as a known Nazi sympathizer. So far, only about 80 cases have been resolved by guilty pleas, largely by those who were charged only with misdemeanor offenses. Scores of others face serious felony charges, including conspiracy, assaulting officers, and obstructing of an official proceeding that call for lengthy sentences behind bars. The Justice Department has called it the largest investigation in American history, with probes open in 55 out of 56 FBI field offices. Evidence collected in the attack includes thousands of hours of video footage, hundreds of thousands of tips from the public, and more than 1 million parlor posts, replies, and data. The Justice Department is building massive databases to share all evidence stemming from the attack with defense attorneys. In the most high-profile case brought so far, involving more than a dozen members and associates of the far-right extremist group, the Oath Keepers, prosecutors recently told a judge that a January trial date for the first set of defendants is looking increasingly unrealistic, given how much evidence they still need to get into defense attorneys' hands. U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta said if they want to wait until prosecutors turn over every single scrap of evidence, they've collected in the January 6th investigation, rather than just that which relates to a specific defendant. There won't be trials in any of these cases before 2023, and three of the Oath Keepers defendants accused of conspiring to block the certification of Joe Biden's presidential election victory over Trump are behind bars. Quote, I have to keep their interest in a speedy trial in mind here, Mehta said. I am concerned about a lengthy pretrial detention period, he added. He didn't immediately rule out, but signaled that the first Oath Keepers trial would likely be pushed to April, with the second scheduled for July. At least one of those roughly 70 defendants who are locked up pre-trial has already pointed to the delays in an effort to get out of jail. Kelly Meigs, described by authorities as the leader of the Florida chapter of the Oath Keepers, said in an unsuccessful motion for release that with a January trial looking unlikely, he's effectively being held in indefinite pretrial detention, which, under the circumstances, is tantamount to a human rights violation, unquote. Prosecutors say they are working as quickly as possible under unprecedented challenges to share all evidence that could potentially help the defense and keep the cases moving forward. But new evidence is still being unearthed with each new arrest or as analysis is completed on the thousands of hours of video taken during that chaotic day. In the case of Robert Reeder, armchair detectives who call themselves sedition hunters unearthed new evidence just before he was supposed to be sentenced last month with a recommendation of probation. The video appears to show Reeder scuffling with a police officer, running counter to his assertion that he had not been part of any violence that day. Reeder's attorney called the clip problematic. A new sentencing is set for October 8th. The coronavirus is only making matters worse. Cases were already backed up because of the pandemic, and the court has said no more than three trials can be held at once, at least until the end of October, to allow for social distancing. A judge in one case recently warned attorneys there's no guarantee they will be going to trial as planned in February if COVID-19 numbers tick up. The pandemic has also made it harder for defendants held behind bars to safely work with their lawyers, a problem that's plagued the entire criminal justice system. Turning the page now to the Cedar Valley section, we find on the left-hand side column the Call the Courier column. Question, what year did the Democratic Party take God out of their platform? Answer, according to PolitiFact, when the 2012 platform was unveiled and did not include the word God, Democrats, under pressure from President Barack Obama, quickly changed it. The Washington Post reported at the time that a press secretary for the Democratic National Committee called it a faux controversy, referring to a section of the platform about faith, and pointed out there were multiple uses of the words faith, religion, religious, church, and clergy. The 2020 platform similarly included references to faith and religion, including a section titled, quote, Supporting Faith and Service, that reads, Religious freedom is a core American value and a core value of the Democratic Party. Democrats will protect the rights of each American for the free exercise of his or her own religion. It will be the policy of the Democratic administration to advocate for religious freedom throughout the world, unquote. Question, who owns and runs the New Scent Church? Answer, according to its website, the Scent Church at 5625 Prairie Street in Cedar Falls was started by pastors Danielle and Emily Quimby in 2020. The website states, quote, we're not just a church, we're a movement of people sent out by God to love the one, serve our cities, and change the world. Whether you've been born in church or your whole life or have never been in church, we have a place for you here, unquote. Question, does the FDA fully approve the COVID vaccines? Answer, the Food and Drug Administration has granted Pfizer and BioNTech full U.S. approval of its COVID-19 vaccine. Moderna's two-shot and Johnson & Johnson's one-shot vaccines continue to be available under an emergency use authorization. Moderna requested full approval on August 23rd and is expected to receive it soon. Johnson & Johnson has said it expects to apply for full approval later this year. Question: in Washington, D.C., what are they doing at the Korea Monument? Answer: the National Park Service and the Korean War Veterans Memorial Foundation are constructing a wall of remembrance and undertaking an overall rehabilitation of the Korean War Veterans Memorial. The Wall of Remembrance is a permanent addition to the memorial, which will include the names of 36,574 American servicemen and more than 7,200 members of the Korean augmentation to the United States Army who gave their lives defending the people of South Korea. Question: what is Nancy Newhoff doing since her retirement? Answer: retired Courier editor Nancy Newhoff replies, quote, I am keeping busy. I helped edit a book and have a couple of other book editing projects in the works. I took a part-time job at Pepper's Sports Bar and Grill in Cedar Falls as a host, helping with to-go orders. Question: what is being dug up at Miller Park in Waterloo? Answer: St. Edward's Church is doing a large renovation and addition. In order to meet stormwater management requirements, the City Council and the Leisure Services Board have approved an agreement with the church to place a stormwater retention basin in the park. The church will be responsible for the construction and maintenance of the basin. Question: on Black Hawk Road, there is a junkyard which has been there for years. Why has nothing ever been done? It's nasty. Answer: the City of Waterloo went to the court against the salvage yard in the 1980s and 1990s and lost in the Supreme Court of Iowa. The salvage yard was determined to be grandfathered in by the courts. Question: there are political signs in Cedar Falls that say Tom for Mayor. Who is Tom? I don't see a last name. Answer: Tom Blanford, a former councilman who is in support of the public safety officer model, is running for Cedar Falls mayor against Councilor Dave Sires and the incumbent, Mayor Rob Green. More about Blanford's campaign can be found at www.tomforcfmayor.com. Calls are taken on a special courier phone line at 234-3566. Questions are answered by courier staff. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Cedar Falls, Gary Allen Phobian, 76, of Cedar Falls, passed away at his home on Monday, September 27, 2021. He was born December 5, 1944, in Cedar Falls, son of Casper and Anna, maiden name Jorgensen, Phobian. Gary graduated from Cedar Falls High School with the class of 1964, then went to Omaha for training in automotive bodywork. He enlisted in the U.S. Navy, serving in active duty from October 1965 until October 1969. On April 18, 1970, Gary married Sharon Kathleen Mervin in Waterloo. He worked for Dofer Engineering for 39 years before retiring in 2009. Gary's funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, October 1st, 2021, at Dahl Van Hoff Schoof Funeral Home of Cedar Falls, with burial to follow at Cedar Valley Memorial Gardens. His visitation will be from 4 to 6 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, September 30th. Also at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice or the American Cancer Society, and condolences can be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Gary was a gifted welder and fabricator and loved the challenge of a complicated design. He was an avid vegetable gardener and enjoyed dirt racing. Gary had a special place in his heart for each of the canine companions who walked beside him in his lifetime. Cedar Falls. Lillian, Lil, Louise Lonergan, 90, a lifetime Cedar Falls resident, died Sunday, September 26, 2021, at Valley View Village in Des Moines. The family will receive friends at 9:30 a.m. Friday, October 1st, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Lincoln Township near Victor, Iowa. The funeral begins at 10:30 a.m., with lunch immediately following, also at the church. At 1 p.m., graveside service will be held at the IOOF Cemetery, Maringold, Iowa. Memorials may be designated to the College Hill Lutheran Church, Cedar Falls, and mailed in care of Smith Funeral Home, Post Office Box 368, Grinnell, Iowa, 50112. Memories and condolences may be shared at smithfh.com. Ryan Joseph Clark passed away on September 25, 2021, at Mercy One, at the age of 43. He was born in Iowa City on November 30, 1977, the son of Joseph Stewart and Deborah, maiden name Clark, Yancey. Ryan married Hannah Nyland on October 27, 2012. Ryan loved trains, especially as a kid, and motorcycles. He dreamed of being a conductor. Ryan also loved pirates, singing karaoke, Legos, the band Pink Floyd, and playing Santa Claus at Christmas. Memorials may be directed to the family. A visitation will be held at Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories, 965 Home Plaza, on Saturday, October 2, 2021, from 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock p.m. A funeral service will follow at Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories at 12 o'clock p.m. Masks are required. Burial at Mount Olivet Cemetery will take place on Saturday, October 2, 2021, at 1:15, after a final motorcycle ride. Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories is in charge of arrangements. Their phone number is 319-232-3235. Condolences may be left at www.parrotandwood.com. New Hartford. John A. McEnany, 85, of New Hartford, died Tuesday, September 28, 2021, at the Bartles Lutheran Retirement Community in Waverly. John was born January 11, 1936, the son of John and Mary, maiden name Farrell, McEnany, in Dubuque, Iowa. He graduated from Lawler High School, where he was active in baseball, basketball, and Boy Scouts. On June 1, 1958, he was united in marriage to Evelyn Denner. They initially made their home on the farm near Jackson Junction and then moved to New Hartford in 1968. The couple would later divorce. John was a farmer and an over-the-road trucker and worked at John Deere for 23 years. On February 14, 1981, he was united in marriage to Sarah Yarko Johnson in New Hartford. They lived in New Hartford. Sarah passed away in 2016, and John continued to live in New Hartford. If you knew John, you knew he loved to visit. He could carry on a conversation with anyone and loved to tell stories. He was an avid outdoorsman. He loved to hunt, fish, go camping, and cut wood. One of his favorite things to do was drive around and eat at restaurants. He enjoyed watching Western movies and cheering on the Green Bay Packers and his favorite quarterback, Tom Brady, with the Patriots and the Buccaneers. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, September 30th, at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, October 1st, 2021, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Parkersburg. Burial will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 2, 2021, at St. Rose Cemetery in Wacoma. Memorials may be directed to the family, and online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly is in charge of arrangements, and their phone number is 319-352-1187. Waterloo. Matthew J. Kuhn, 92, of Waterloo, died Sunday, September 26, 2021, at Rosewood Estate, Friendship Village. He was born August 25, 1929, in Buchanan County, and graduated from Lamont High School. He married Dorothy Moser, September 4, 1949, in Lamont, and had three children, Kay, Carla, and Kurt. Dorothy died July 9, 1969. Matt married Moselle Polk on March 18, 1973, in Waterloo. She died September 3, 2021. Matt worked briefly in banking, moonlighted at a DX service station, but spent 35 years working for John Deere. Initially, he worked at the Waterloo Works in the service parts department and then at the Product Engineering Center in the specifications department. He retired November 30, 1984. He volunteered for BSA, GSA, Civil Defense for National Emergencies, and American Red Cross, and staffed the first aid booth at Cattle Congress for years. After retiring, Matt also volunteered at EPI, Covenant, Mercy One, Volunteers, SCORE, and RSVP. He was a member of First United Methodist Church, John Deere Supervisors Club, Indian Guides, Waterloo Masonic Lodge, High 12, Low 12. Matt loved the outdoors and was a lifetime learner. Family services will be held later with interment in Taylorville Cemetery, Arlington. Memorials to the family. Visit www.lockfuneralservices.com. Cedar Falls. Larry L. McKinney, 74, of Cedar Falls, died Friday, September 24, 2021, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital. He was born September 22, 1947, in Cedar Falls, son of Lewis and Lorraine, maiden name Lawrence, McKinney. He grew up in rural Dunkerton and attended Dunkerton High School. On July 2, 1968, he was united in marriage to Linda Spildy in Waterloo, Iowa. Larry spent his life serving others. He enlisted in the U.S. Army and served his country in Vietnam from 1966 to 1969. He returned to Iowa, and in 1973, he was hired as a firefighter with Waterloo Fire and Rescue, retiring in 2002. Over 29 years, he held many positions, including general firefighter, driver, EMT, and training officer. He retired as a decorated and respected lieutenant, and following retirement, continued his career in the fire service as an inspector from 2004 to 2010. Larry was a man of faith, demonstrated by his second career in the ministry. He was ordained on June 1, 2000. He served as chaplain for the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Department for 10 years, and Waterloo Fire and Rescue for 22 years. Larry was pastor of the Hammond Avenue Brethren Church for 6 years, retiring in 2018. For most of his life, Larry was an active member of Open Bible Church, where he also served as relief pastor. Larry loved spending time with family and friends. His favorite activities included reading, fishing, and playing cards. But above all else, his greatest joy was helping people. If you were his neighbor, he cleared your snow and freely offered his time and tools. If you were his friend, he would be at your side whenever and wherever he could lend a hand. If you were part of his congregation, he was always ready to drop everything to ease your burden. If you were family, there is nothing he wouldn't do to make your life easier. If you knew Larry McKinney, he probably helped you at some point, and you likely didn't have to ask. His greatest joy was serving the church, his community, and spreading God's word. Memorial services will be 11 a.m. Saturday, October 2nd, at the First Church of the Open Bible, 928 Jefferson Street, Waterloo. Services will be live streamed on their Facebook page. Visitation will be 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Friday at the Open Bible Church, Waterloo. Family interment will be held at a later date in the Ivester Brethren Cemetery, Ivester, Iowa. In lieu of flowers, memorials to the family. Visit www.lockfuneralservice.com. Now let's continue with local news from the Waterloo Cedar Falls area. Man reports robbery at apartment building. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz, Waterloo. A man said he was robbed at gunpoint when he went to a Waterloo apartment building to meet a woman he found on a dating app. The man told police he entered the apartment building at 607 Wellington Court around 6:05 p.m. Monday to meet the woman, and a woman with a gun approached him in the hallway. She took his cell phone and cash and fled. No injuries were reported, and no arrests have been made. Waterloo teen reports bike robbery, filed by Jeff Reinitz, Waterloo. Police are investigating a Monday night attack where a Waterloo teen was robbed of his bike by another youth at knife point. According to police, the 14-year-old boy was riding in the 1300 block of West 5th Street around 5:40 p.m. when he was knocked from his bike. The assailant threatened him with a knife and took cash and his bike before leaving. Next, in the story filed by Jeff Reinitz, one dead in pickup truck semi-collision in Hudson. One person has died in a head-on collision with a semi that ended in flames Tuesday morning. The name of the deceased hasn't been released, pending notification of relatives. The crash happened on Hudson Road, Highway 58, north of Hudson, when the northbound tractor-trailer and the southbound pickup collided just south of Strayer Road. The pickup caught fire, throwing flames into the air. The driver died at the scene. The semi-driver had minor injuries, said Police Chief Daniel Banks. Banks said it wasn't clear if popping sounds heard during the fire was ammunition discharging, as was initially feared. Crews with Hudson Fire and Rescue extinguished the flames. The Blackhawk County Sheriff's Officer, Cedar Falls Police, Mercy One Ambulance, Iowa Department of Transportation, and other agencies also assisted at the scene. Traffic on Hudson Road was rerouted until Monday afternoon. Now let's pick up the rest of the stories on the Cedar Valley page. Parents raise recess concerns. Parents raise concerns about limited recess time to Waterloo School Board. Story filed by Andrew Wind. Waterloo. A group of parents is calling on Waterloo Community Schools to expand recess for elementary students. Three people spoke on the matter Monday during the Board of Education's public comment period. Brittany Koch created a Facebook group receiving input from other parents on their concerns. One that emerged was recess. She said elementary students in the neighboring Cedar Falls Community Schools receive more time for recess during their day. A Waterloo Schools spokesperson said for several years, students have had 20 minutes of outside recess daily. They also have brain and movement breaks interspersed throughout the day. She noted playtime is important for students to develop interpersonal skills. Little people need the time and ability to grow those social and emotional skills, said Koch. She called the unstructured time in recess a great opportunity to do that. Quote, I'm here supporting what was just said regarding recess, Nora Kurtovic told the board. She also had concerns about how brain breaks from learning that teachers employ while students remain in the classroom are being used. Kurtovic said teachers tend to minimize or take away minutes from a brain break or recess as they try to get the kids under control. I do believe there's benefits to recess, she added, and other tools should be used for such behavior issues. Quote, it really feels like students just aren't getting enough time to be with students. Having that time to play at recess, said Lisa Hayden Kimball. She said the limited time students have for lunch is problematic for those who are at the end of the line, potentially causing them to rush through the meal or not eat at all. They definitely need more time to safely consume their food and not let that interfere with their 1 20-minute time of day to have recess, said Hayden Kimball. Superintendent Jane Lindemann expressed appreciation that the parents brought the concerns to the district's attention. Quote, we have started gathering some things, she told the board, to see how much recess time is given to students in other districts. So we're going to get that information to you from other districts, it's a good chance to look, unquote. Board member Sue Flynn noted that Waterloo schools may have some unique concerns and different needs that could make it difficult to adjust to what other districts do. As a result, she cautioned against always being comparative to everybody else, unquote. The next story is filed by Melody Parker. Theater UNI opens live season with whimsical, deconstructed myth. Quote, "A Small Pair of Feet in the Middle of the Sea" opens at 7 p.m. Wednesday, with additional performances at 7 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sunday. The show will take place in the Arts Triangle Courtyard on the University of Northern Iowa campus. Quote, "There were a lot of nerves when we first started rehearsals, that feeling like we were rusty. But we jumped right in and found the groove again," said director Matthew Weedman, associate professor of performance. The play deconstructs the myth of Icarus, the boy who flew too close to the sun, in his joy and the freedom found in his wax and feather wings, and comes crashing to earth. Described by Steinkeller as a whimsical drama, the play is at once funny, off-center, and silly, and at times sad, emotionally impactful, and moving, said Weedman. In the production, the 8-member cast asked questions about the essential nature of the truth, the lies we tell ourselves, and the power of story and myth. Quote, "It is intentionally anachronistic. We also have a Greek chorus that talks to each other about what is happening, makes really bad jokes and comments to the audience, and continually points out what the play is about," the director explained. Quote, "I think it's very clever, and I wished the audience could read the stage directions, which are almost as long as the play direction itself, and hilarious. A stage has been built in the Arts Triangle Courtyard. There will be seating, but audience members also can bring blankets to sit on the ground. It's a pretty cool way to mitigate COVID. The story is told in words, but with lots of props. The Greek chorus is on stage to hand props to the actors. It's really very clever. The audience will be very close to actors and may be enlisted to help move some things," Weedman said with a laugh. Scenic design is by Mark Parrott. Associate Professor of Design and Costume Design is by Megan Gilchrist, a senior design and production student. Lighting design is by Ron Goinsen, and the production stage manager is Olivia McQuarrie. Tickets are $15 for chairs, $10 for stair seats, cushions available, $6 for ground seats, bring your own blanket, and free for UNI students with their student ID. Tickets can be purchased at unitix.uni.edu or at Unitix counter in the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center. For more information, call the Strayer Wood Theater box office at 273-6381 or go to www.uni.edu/theater/SWT. UNI Economic Development Expert backs formation of Cedar Falls EDC. Story filed by Andy Malone. Cedar Falls. Economic development corporations have been established in nearby communities like Waterloo and Marion, and now Cedar Falls has one. Such nonprofits, known as EDCs, are not a new concept, and there are many different types, says Randy Pilkington, executive director of the University of Northern Iowa Business School's Economic and Community Development Division. The accomplished development professional supports the entity being established in Cedar Falls after talking with one of its founders. Quote, "They've been taking a really thoughtful approach to it. They're taking the time to talk with a lot of different people and are not running blind or in isolation," Pilkington said in a telephone interview Wednesday. EDCs provide resources and leverage public and private partnerships for key projects, Pilkington said, and even go a bit further in cases and take ownership of them to the point where they acquire property. Pilkington, who has served as a member of the Professional Developers of Iowa, Iowa Department of Economic Development Board of Directors, and the Governor's Council of Economic Advisers pointed to the success of Waterloo's EDC and how it played a role in the evolution of the city's downtown. Jim Brown, one of the founders of the Cedar Falls Economic Development Corporation, made clear last Monday to the City Council that the 501c4 is intended to be more of an advocacy group for economic development and won't necessarily be as aggressive. CFEDC formed in July and is still getting off the ground, but Brown noted Waterloo's EDC is a little bit of a different animal. But the former Cedar Falls mayor highlighted potential projects CFEDC could find itself involved in that can range from single-family vacant lots to large-scale development, unquote. He noted there is usable land from the school district and hospital, as well as other opportunities associated with available state and federal road funds, the University Avenue Corridor, Thunder Ridge, College Hill, and affordable housing. There have been no formal discussions with these entities. There's been some informal discussions. Nothing is ironclad, he said. Brown said Cedar Falls has missed out on funding opportunities offered by the Iowa Economic Development Authority that our taxpayers in Cedar Falls send their taxes to. Last year, $100 million was available for not just cities, but entire regions. Quote, we're not getting those dollars, he said. City Council approved a request last Monday to provide $75,000 to the CFEDC from the city's Economic Development Fund. It will discuss providing another $75,000 during its goal-setting sessions after the election. Councilor Frank Dara suggested continuing the conversation on CFEDC's role and talking further about the relationship between it, the city, and Grow Cedar Valley. Quote, I think it's a larger discussion that we need to have going forward, Dara said. Economic development is a very competitive animal, and the more we can understand about where we're headed, what the city role is, and what our private partners' roles are, I think that's healthy, unquote. A few councilors voiced concerns about the CFEDC duplicating what other entities already are doing. But Brown emphasizes he doesn't envision the roles of the other entities changing, specifically that of Shane Graham, the city's economic development coordinator. Quote, it will be value added into the future because we will work with the city, but not be a part of the city. I think that's a key distinction in relation to not duplicating, but working alongside, Brown said. Next story, filed by Jeff Reinitz, Manchester. A Manchester man has been found guilty of sex trafficking a woman in Waterloo and other Iowa communities. A federal jury found Darius Decknan Reed, 33, formerly of Waterloo, guilty of sex trafficking by force or coercion, facilitation of prostitution, and distribution of an MDMA ecstasy to a person under the age of 21, in a verdict handed down Friday in U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Iowa in Des Moines, according to prosecutors. Red faces 15 years to life in prison, and he remains in custody until a sentencing hearing scheduled for January. According to court documents and testimony at the four-day trial, Red used deception and coercion, as well as physical force, to compel the woman to engage in sex acts in exchange for money, and then kept all of the proceeds. Prosecutors said he supplied the victim with a controlled substance and posted advertisements with the victim and other women on an escort website. Testimony and evidence revealed Red had distributed controlled substances to other women and had attempted to recruit or compel other women to engage in commercial sex acts for his monetary gain, prosecutors said. Court records alleged Red met with the victim, a college student, at a gas station in February 2020 and later filmed himself having sex with her in order to obtain leverage. He solicited her to have sex with others and told her she owed him $2,500 for a choosing fee that she would have to work off through sex work, court records state. She was told she would keep her proceeds after she paid off the fee, but that turned out not to be true. Red allegedly posted advertisements for her on the Skip the Games escort site and drove her to encounters around Iowa, keeping the money she earned, records state. Red trafficked the victim in Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Waterloo, Clive, and surrounding areas in March 2020. A March 2020 argument between the woman and a client at a Clive hotel drew the attention of Clive police. A few days later, Red found the woman and lured her back by promising to return her wallet. He then trafficked her at other hotels and beat her, court records state. She eventually escaped, and Red began texting her, saying he would release videos of her having sex if she didn't send him money, records state. A federal grand jury indicted Red in September 2020, and the case remained sealed until he was detained in January. The case was investigated by the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, Clive Police Department, University of Iowa Police Department, Iowa City Police Department, Manchester Police Department, Iowa Department of Corrections, and the Iowa Division of Narcotics Enforcement. The Des Moines Police Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation participated in trial presentation. In the Metro Briefs column, Wartburg to host Ritter Sing concert. Waverly. More than 400 tenors and basses will join in a day of singing and voice master classes at Ritter Sing, a Wartburg College music festival that culminates with a finale concert at 5 p.m. Saturday in Newman Auditorium. Concert tickets are $15 for adults and $5 for kindergarten through 12th grade students and are available at www.wartburg.edu/festivals. The concert will also be live streamed at www.wartburg.edu/nightvision, spelled KNIGHTVISION. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Wednesday, September 29th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time, and you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which will follow shortly. Thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.